Hello, hello. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers that tune in to Jules on the Hustle. I hope you guys are enjoying this beautiful day despite some difficult circumstances we are living in. But today I have a special guest and friend on the podcast. She's a comedian podcaster from Chanel in the City. You might also know her from the Bravo reality TV show Princesses of Long Island. We actually met back in 2019. I was running a charity event at Alice and Olivia in Americana, Manhasset. Shout out to them, where 20% of proceeds went to NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. It was a hit, and I absolutely adored getting to know Chanel. On this podcast, I know Chanel wants to discuss her quarantine life, what virtual dating has been like, and also being too nice. You know, Chanel is a very warm, sweet person, always looking to do things for other people and make a difference. However, she is in a very competitive and difficult field. So she talks about how being too nice can possibly get in her way sometimes. But without further ado, the lovely Chanel Omari.
I love you, Jules on the Hustle. What an honor to be on this podcast. An honor it is.
Oh. Mwah. Love you, girl. Tell me, where'd you get the name Chanel in the City? I want to hear the background story. You are a Long Islander.
I am. So we're both Long Island girls. I wasn't born and raised on Long Island. I was actually born and raised in Brooklyn and then moved to Long Island. But it's funny that you asked me this question. No one really asked me this question, so it's a good question. So my father, God bless him, he's from the Middle East. He's from Israel. He came here to America with like $5 in his pocket, worked his ass off. And when he married my mom, I was his first child. He's like, listen, I'm in fashion. I need this girl, my girl, first baby. She has to be expensive. She has to seem expensive and feel expensive. I love, and he said it like this with his accent. He goes, I love Chanel. You can't go wrong with Chanel. Little did he know, I was going to be ridiculed my entire life for that name. And I didn't know how special that name was until later. But like, it derived from the fact that my dad was a fashion designer for shoes, and he was always immersed in the fashion culture and industry, and very like in tune with his feelings as a straight guy. So he was ahead of his time, we like to call it. So my mom was like, okay, yeah, let's spell it like Chanel, and let's, you know, she'll always feel special. And now here we are. And then mm-hmm. Chanel in the City came from the fact that, like, so I was on a show called Long Island Princesses of Long Island on Bravo TV. In 2013, we aired, and I think a lot of the stigma from that show, first of all, I was so grateful and appreciative that I had the opportunity with Bravo, because it's not easy to be on Bravo. And so shout out to them for supporting me through that time. But, you know, we all don't know how reality TV is going to be. There's no formula. What's a show that's longevity? There's shows that are not as good that are on for a long time. There's shows that are great that are on for one season. And since that season, I was always... like, the stigma about me was, like, I was the princess of Long Island. Like, I didn't do anything. So, for me, it was important to, like, make people understand, like, I was a producer. I was a writer. I've been in radio. I've been on air on the radio show on Long Island on BLI for 4 years. I'm a comedian. Like, there's different avenues that you need to take to be an entertainer. And so, I said to myself, why don't I start a podcast mm-hmm. and a digital series about... Everyone always says, Chanel, you're like Chanel in the City. You're the girl in the city. You're the girl to know. You're the girl who knows the 411. You're the girl who knows the hot spots. And a lot of the celebrities at the time were like confiding in me. Oh my God, like, what do you do? Like, this is where I go in the city to help me get over my escape or my obstacles. And I felt that's really important. Like, how do we marry pop culture and something deeper? And so that's how Chanel in the City was created. And it's on iHeartRadio now and radio.com and Spotify and iTunes as a podcast. But then it's a digital series on my YouTube channel. And so we add a lot of like comedy to it, and it's, yeah, that's it.
Do you have something in specific you like to focus on your podcast? I know mental health is super important to you, but what's the main aim or focus of your podcast? Just so people listening to Jules on the Hustle can tell if they want to listen to your podcast, which I'm sure they will, because you're just so fun, entertaining, bubbly. If you like my podcast, you like Chanel's podcast, because we have like the same personality, really.
Thank you, Jules. Yeah, you're my sister from another mister. Yeah, we have a lot in common. But, yes. Like, we both come from Middle Eastern families mm-hmm. but we're both Americanized, and we've both been in competitive fields. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would say that like I wanted the podcast to not just focus on the fluffy, superficial side. So there's that aspect, right, where I was like the guinea pig for everyone, where I'd go to hot spots and restaurants and I'd try the best ones and then introduce that to my audience for them to feel better. But then there's the other side of mental health, where I've struggled through a lot of depression and anxiety. I've struggled through coping with it and just admitting it in the public eye, I felt like, because I've come from a family where it's just taboo to talk about it out loud because it seems like you're weak. So I had to like really come into myself and like start evolving and love myself and know who I was for me to say, you know what, this podcast has to be bigger than me. It has to be about people, other people's mental health. So we talk about like celebrities, what they've had to come across, or mental health obstacles they had to come over, how they deal with it, you know, how they've gotten rejected in the industry, what happens when you're denied by that hotspot club, you know, like if you can't get into the One Oaks of the world, if you can, well, now that it's COVID, so, you know, that we'll get into that, but we get into COVID too. We talk about like, how do you quarantine mentally? And when you're stuck in a house, when everybody has a different reaction to you, when everybody relates to you differently, you know, so I felt like the podcast would be a happy medium between fun, entertainment, but also mental health and helping people understand that they're not alone. We all go through the same thing. Just because we're public figures or we're not public figures doesn't mean, look, COVID-19 happened to teach us a lesson, I feel, from a higher power, that none of us have control. None of us have power. So you could be Beyonce, or you could be, you know, Chanel Amari, or you could be, you know, Jules Alibaba, or you could be Jamie Smith from, you know, the hospital saving lives. It doesn't matter. We're all equal. We're all going to like come into this world and leave this world the same. And I know it's cheesy and cliche, but we have to remember that during this time. And we have to remember that in general, I think what separates us as podcasters is having a platform to do good and not always just talking about like gossip or who's, that's because that's not what my podcast is about. Right. It's actually talking about beyond the gossip, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And this is a great segue, because after this episode, I'm doing an episode about mental health and sports. So my podcast is obviously predominantly about sports, but I wanted to have you on here because, you know, you have such an amazing background and you really are in touch with yourself and other people and you truly care. I mean, Chanel, I'd say 3 to 4 times a week, goes Instagram Live to simply bring positivity. She jams out to these songs. What's your Instagram handle, Chanel?
I love you. Yes, it's at Chanel Amari. I'm so happy it gives you life.
Yes, I tune in every time.
You do. You're such a fan. Uh-huh. Do you laugh, though? Does it really make you happy? Because that's all I care about.
I sometimes need a smile, and sometimes I'm laughing with you, or sometimes I'm laughing at you, but regardless, good. I'm laughing.
Good. So that's all that matters, because I seriously simply do it for that reason. Mm-hmm. I simply want to, I know my parents are like, you look crazy, but the point of like being an entertainer in comedy is like to not care about looking crazy or not.
Exactly. You don't always have to look your best. Social media wants you to always put yourself in the best light, but the most relatable and people that we like most are people that we can all relate to. So, which is sometimes, you know, the morning look and stuff like that. But you come, give us your handle. What is it at?
Yeah, so it's at Chanel Omari, okay. And also you can follow me at Chanel in the, for at Chanel in the city.
Okay.
So, you know, you can get all the updates for the podcast there. And I was going to tell you actually about sports. We've spoken about this. Like, a lot of people don't know that I'm athletic and I've been into sports, but I've actually played a lot of field hockey. I was very passionate about field hockey growing up. I was actually really good at it because I was like heavier. Well, I don't want to say because you're heavier weight set, you're good at it, but I was just more in shape, I think, and more strong and less lazy and focused. And it was a way for me to like escape mentally. So on the field, I would just like be the best goalie, because I would, everything I was going through at the time, I would just think about, I would just put it into sports. I was a basketball player. So it's just funny how we spoke about like hustling, which is the point of your podcast. It's always about like hustling. Cause like you are a pro tennis player, but at the same time, you're also a reporter for Newsday. That's the whole point. Like, I don't think there's an either. I don't think there has to be like a specific thing you have to do in order to make it an entertainment. That's my point.
Right. And the reason why I called it hustle is because obviously in New York, we're always hustling, but also I wanted a side hustle. from like tennis. So it was honestly like, it just, when it hit me, I was like, that's the one. Like, you know, when a light bulb just goes off and it's like, this is perfect. But yeah, no, I'm so glad to have you on here. And I just want to say, I really appreciate you like asking everyone how they're doing during quarantine. How have you been doing during quarantine?
It's a good question. I mean, I'm hanging in. First of all, shout out to all the frontline workers, and thank you to also all the journalists at Newsday. You guys have been holding the fort, to all the doctors, to all the, you know, essential workers that are cleaning the trains and making us all healthy. Let me tell you something. This is such a job that I don't even know if I would do, to be honest. Yeah. I always like to praise that I'm a selfless person, but I didn't realize that a lot of our selfishness as human beings, like when this happened, we all have to take care of ourselves. So it's hard to take care of other people. And to be honest, it's been a little bit of a challenge mentally, because as you see, I go crazy on my Instagram. I almost pulled a Britney Spears. I'm not even kidding.
I might do it
honestly for mental health. Like, I feel for me, if I do it, if this makes sense, it's gonna help me be really okay with who I am. Because if I could shave my head and be naked vulnerably like that and be okay, what else bad can happen? Think about it.
You're totally right. And also, they say the less hair, the more protected you are against coronavirus. So,
ooh,
yeah. So all the hospital workers are trying.
Why is that?
Maybe because the virus can get stuck to the hair and bring it in. I don't know. I'll have to check on that.
But
I'll get back to you.
Tip.
Yeah. So I don't know.
That's really interesting.
Is that gonna?
I mean, you've been through it, right? Like,
yeah.
In competitive, whether you're in sports competitively or you're anything that happened with COVID, like, are you going crazy? Like, sometimes I feel like I'm going crazy. That's why I take it out on like my Instagram outlet, and that's why I take it out and like I say, try to be creative during this time. Like, we're lucky we have podcasts, because I feel like, to me, we didn't really transition, and then you get to work from home. So like, we really aren't feeling it as much as others really are feeling it in a small space. And I, God bless them, and I pray for everyone. But yeah, I think I'm worried more about mentally if we're still in here, if I don't pull a Britney Spears, hopefully.
Well, truthfully, I wasn't podcasting as much as I wanted to before quarantine. And during this time, it's given me time to realize I need like an outlet to kind of relax, talk to other people, see how they're doing, and just, you know, just really enjoy just engaging with people over Zoom or Skype, FaceTime, whatever. And so podcasting has been my way to cope. And with tennis, becoming part of Newsday has helped me cope with the stresses of tennis. So for me, it's always about having two or three things to balance. I'm not one of those girls that just do one thing and can really focus on that and do it all day, all night. I go crazy.
Me too. I need to have, like you said, a side hustle.
Yeah.
Whether it is sports or whether it is comedy or thinking outside the box, podcasting. I feel it's important. And by the way, podcasting is a way to give back in one form. Like, a lot of people ask us, what do you do with your celebrity? What do you do with your, you know, public figure? I feel like the both of us have the podcast to say, to mention charities, to mention people that are going through a hard time that need our help or need people to donate money. So I think it's a good way for anyone to start, you know, giving back. And like you said, it's an outlet for us to find who we are and find our voice, right?
Absolutely. And going off of that, I wanted to talk. So everyone listening to this podcast can only hear our voices, but we are on Zoom right now talking. Chanel has gone through many different hairstyles. She used to have that long brown hair. Then she chopped it all off. Not all off, sorry. Up to like, what would you say?
Yeah, your chin.
And it inspired me. I loved it. And then I chopped 12 inches off because of Chanel.
And you look amazing.
But it's grown so much. It's crazy.
Mine hasn't grown as much, which usually it does grow a lot.
Is yours shorter behind your head and then longer in the front? Yeah, I noticed there's a little, what's the name of that cut? Is that like a special cut?
So yeah, it's by, shout out to Nuba Salon and Spa on Long Island, because they've really helped me evolve my look and like transition all from cutting my hair. Jamie Mazzi, he's the owner, he's the creative director, and Christian Flores, he's the colorist director. So I would always say, like, trust your experts. I got to them and I was like, what do you think I want? I know what I want. I want to have that Bob Kim Kardashian look, because it's easy, it feels light, and it's like a refresh, and she looks great in it. But I also want to rock it to carpet events and like be able to like rock it and also wear wigs. So they were like, okay, let's give you, it's called like the Kim K Bobcat, which mm-hmm. is short in the back, long in the front. And if I bleach it, I guess it wasn't going to grow as much. And I was trying to get it to silver, but then COVID hit. Because when you transition your colors, I didn't know this, you can't just go from brown to blonde or brown to silver right away. Usually a lot of the actors and actresses use wigs. So I don't have all that money to use wigs. So I said, I'm okay with being silver for a long time, even if it's for a year. And then if you're silver, you can change it to anything, pink, blue, and it's easier. So yeah, I didn't get to change it to pink. Now I look like the Jewish Joker because I have half brown and half blonde. That's actually part of my comedy bit, which I actually did up at Stand Up New York before Corona hit. It's all part of my comedy bit, the whole hairstyle thing, because I literally look like a Joker, like when I'm not upkeeping it. You have to like upkeep it. You have to use the right conditioner and shampoo, which I use Celebrity Luxury. And let me tell you something, it's not for a superficial reason. The reason I change my hairstyles, if anybody out there needs a tip to cope with mental health, for me, it's helped me cope with my mental health. So every time I'm sad or depressed, or I want to be creative or I want to create, I change my hair color, I change a style so I could feel and look different and evolve in different seasons of my life. It just makes me feel like I can mature and evolve to a different person, be more open-minded, be less judgmental. This is what it does for me. I know it sounds so
No, it doesn't crazy. Sound crazy or anything. Sorry, that's not what you said. It doesn't sound crazy.
It sounds crazy. It does. Some guys are like, you want attention. I'm like, I swear, it's not. Know. You know me, Jules. I can go in a room and not have attention.
Chanel, I know you. You are, like, so content and positive and happy with yourself. You're just trying to give that positivity off. For some yes. people, it's getting their nails done, which is not possible yeah. now. Some people, it's getting their hair done. My hair feels really rough right now, to be honest. I want to, like, condition
it. Are you doing your hair on your own now from home? Like, are you, like...
So, honestly, I'm trying to grow it out. I wasn't thrilled with the short hair. For me, I don't know. I looked a little bit younger with longer hair.
I thought you looked amazing.
Like, you liked it with the short or long?
It was, like, a hot, sexy... Yeah.
The long or short?
No, the short, I love you really? Long, but short even. Like, I thought you looked so sophisticated and edgy, and like, you could pull it off, because you're beautiful.
Oh, thank you. No, so are you. I mean, so now thank you have you. That blonde hair, so is the next step, you think you want to go silver?
Yeah, the next step is going to be fully silver.
You would so pull that off. I would tell you if I didn't think you would, but I think you would kill that, more than blonde even.
Thank you. I agree. That's what, yeah. See, the silver... I have an olive complexion, so when anybody has olive complexion, either silver or colors looks good on them. And again, it's not just for the superficiality. It's like when you look good, you feel good. When you feel good, you look good. And I could guarantee you, if you go through the process of going through hair color changes or just in general changing something up in your life, you'll be able to evolve to the next step of your life. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So I want to take it back in time to the days you were on Princesses of Long Island. How old were you when you first went on the show?
I was 26 years old when we first started filming.
And what was life like on set? I know a lot of people ask about reality television. Is it staged? Do they tell you what to say? Or is it 100% real? What was your experience?
Great question. So with our specific show, we were first season. We were actually, nothing was staged. It was all like natural. We were all friends. What happened was the production company came to us. We had pitched a show about kids on Long Island and like their crazy lifestyles. And they had come to me and asked me if I had organic friendships. And so when they were holding the casting on Long Island, they would ask a girl's part of the cast now, but also other girls that were auditioning, who are the like shakers and movers and the players of Long Island? And who does everybody know? Kind of like that popularity contest. It's kind of like high school, because Long Island was like high school. It's like,
truly you know is.
Everybody, right?
And like, doesn't you know, it feel like, cool. And it feels like Americana Manhattan Shopping Center is like the high school. I don't know why, true. It's just the spot.
This is not to be snobby or
no, no.
Facts of Long Island. Like yeah. You have to be in the in crowd, and like when you go to public school or even private school on Long Island, if you're in the in crowd, it's not like one in crowd. You'll know every in crowd from the South Shore to the North Shore towns, like Roslyn, Great Neck to Syosset to Babylon. You'll just know, everybody will know, because that's how everybody would have like house parties and like, you know what I'm saying? And do the beer.
Girl, I know exactly what you're saying. I know it.
But yeah, so like reality TV for me was, you know, it was a great experience, but it was hard to look in the mirror of, you know, they don't make things up about who you are. Mm-hmm. As much as you could say they edited me this way or they edited me to, no one can edit you anyway. If you're strong enough to make the point and you're clear and concise enough, you'll make that point. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
If you're a selfish person and you can't take ownership, like there were selfish things I probably did that I didn't realize at the time and I looked at it, or I cried a lot and I realized I don't have to cry a lot to come off compassionate or come off sympathetic. Like I could still be strong and not cry so much. You know,
and that's
I mean?
The thing about reality television. You may not be crying all the time, but like you said, they edit it that way where they show all the moments you cry. It looks like you're crying nonstop.
Like they embellish, right? Mm-hmm. Like the producers would never script anything. And with our cast, we were much, much more raw because there was a lot at stake with all of us. We've all had history together at some point in life from high school till now. So that's from high school till we're in our late 20s. We've all been in each other's group of friends. We've all had drama together besides the show that we never worked out. Then we had the show, which amplified the fame. And there's a lot of competition between girls in general. When you have an ensemble... See, when you have an ensemble girl cast, I always compare it to Summer House. Summer House, they have a unisex cast. That's easier to maintain and have fun with and continue. When you have a competitive, like, girls cast, it could get out of control. The other thing that people prejudged me about that wasn't true was that I wasn't just a princess on Long Island waiting for my Prince Charming to rescue me. Like, you know, I was working really hard. I worked as a production assistant, worked my way up as a producer. You know, I've worked with Maury Povich, Anderson Cooper, Bill Cunningham, Andy Cohen before Bravo. So things, people don't know, like, the truth of, like, behind what I really was trying to accomplish. And the reason why I joined the show was to let other people know that they can relate, that we don't all have it together. We didn't have it together in our love lives. We didn't have it together in our careers. We all went to expensive, great colleges. We all were raised in privileged areas and homes. But the point of the show was to show you can be from all that and be a mess, right? And you can be broke and come from a not so privileged situation and be a success. So that was the point that I think a lot of people didn't get the message from that, which I wish they did.
And honestly, you were so great on that show. You were one of the really kind ones. I felt it. Like, you see on reality television, there's a lot of bitchiness, cattiness, but Chanel, like, obviously everyone has their moments, but you were really true and sweet. I loved your accent, girl.
Yes, I did have an
accent. My gosh, where did it go first of all, and how does it come out when you're with someone? I need to bring it out so I can bring it out of you.
It's so funny that you say that, because you're right. When you send it to me and I played it back, I was like, she's so right. I think at the time, I always had this insecurity about the Long Island accent, like the Brooklyn Long Island, like, not educated accent, I would say. Not even, like, it just sounds not educated. That's how I was raised thinking. And then I realized, okay, if I want to be a reporter, I want to be taken seriously in the industry, I have to talk slower. I have to pronounce my words very, you know, politely, and I guess in an educated way. I don't even know. I sometimes I broke out into, like, English accent, like, where's the apple? Hey, no, not that. And then I'd be like, what are you talking about, the coffee?
Oh my god,
where's the coffee? I don't know how it goes in and out. You know what it is? I had to be conscious of it. You're right. I had an accent on the show. When I left the show and I realized I was too Long Island, I had to separate myself from just being a princess and just being Long Island and just being a reality star and focus on being an actual, like, reporter or journalist. That's where the podcast helped me, the radio station, being on BLI, honestly, greatest gift in my life. That is the answer. I had great coaches there that dictated to me and taught me how to dictate. It's like when you go to voice lessons or voice coach lessons or singing lessons, they helped me with improv. They helped me, you know, lose that accent. They help me be a little bit more polished. Does that make sense?
It's so cool how you can kind of turn it on and off. Obviously, you slip up sometimes, but it reminds me of the show, you know, Schitt's Creek on Netflix with Moira. She, you know, that's not her real voice. That is incredible how she can do that without, like,
in and out. Yeah, it's the character of, like, and I always call it my alter ego. It's Coco. Coco talks like that. She don't care. Coco crazy.
Coco Chanel. So going forward now, I know being on Princesses of Long Island, I know you mentioned that it kind of has a negative connotation maybe. What do you wish that people knew about you that they may not know?
That's a good question. I wish people knew that I was smart or smarter than I lead on. I wish that people didn't mistake in my weakness, my kindness for weakness. Because I'm very kind, but I'm also strong. I know when to defend myself. I know, you know, how to navigate through life. I wish that people knew that I had an education, that I worked really hard in my life, and I never expected people to just hand it to me, and I never expected to be entitled, or I never meant to give off that impression just because we were associated with a name called princesses. Remember, princesses isn't even a negative thing. It was from our biblical times. I mean, we had our forefathers and our foremothers who were princesses and kings and princes. And the true definition of a princess is someone who can carry themselves with grace and love. And that was the metaphorical part of it I love, where like you can crash down and it's the way you pick yourself back up is what makes you a true princess. So like when you said I was kind in that show, it mattered to me to show that kindness and to teach other people lessons of in that way, where you don't have to be mean or rude to be respected or be of a caliber. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So I wish people knew that. And I wish people knew also that the reason I stayed single wasn't because I can't get a guy or wasn't because I was trying to please my parents. Yeah, of course I want to get married and have kids like everyone. That doesn't matter if you're Jewish or you're not Jewish or you're religious. Everybody wants that. Because I think society has taught us that's what's going to make us happy. But I think what people mistaken about me is that my happiness does not come from another man or another significant other. It comes from myself, and it should come from ourselves. Because I'm never going to be happy, I realize, even if I have a boyfriend who loves me and tells me I can't do no wrong. I'll always be unhappy if I'm not happy with myself.
That's very true. You make a great point. And that's crazy how we've changed the definition of a princess, how we turned it into something bad when it's actually meaning that you're self-sufficient and you could take care of your own self.
Right. That's the stigma that we should be. It's like the Meghan Markle. That's why she's a great inspiration, because she changed the narrative. Right. It's changing the narrative that we're not spoiled brats. We listen, and me and my castmates, I love them. I have nothing but love for them. We've gone through a lot of challenges and tribulations because we were real friends in real life, and people go through that. But in no way have any of us ever felt entitled like people thought we were, or felt like we were spoiled brats or we were cold-hearted people. That was never this, you know, you're watching us for 20 minutes or an hour on TV every week, and that's only one season. So that's where I wish people were more open-minded to know, oh, wow, this girl had a good career. You know, this girl had comedy. I had a comedy career before this, and no one knew about that. Yeah. I was doing stand-up for so long where now people are telling me, some of my peers are like, you need to go back to open mics. And I'm like, no. I need to just keep performing in front of big crowds. That's where my feedback is going to come genuinely, when people who don't know me are either laughing or not laughing. That's how I'm going to know if something works, not if I'm going in an open mic in front of my other peers who want to judge me or bully me or, you know?
Yeah. And for people listening in, Chanel is hilarious. She just needs to be at the right place at the right time. I feel like life is about, being in the right place at the right time. And we actually are trying to put together a live show. And I think, more importantly, I want your personality to come out. I know ultimately my goal is not to be doing stand-up or to entertain on a stage. It's more to become a sports reporter. So if we do this live show, I'm hoping I could support you and we can, you know, bring in some cool guests with us. We'll see what we can do.
And first, like that, you shouldn't even say that, because the truth is, if you did like it and you wanted to do it, you should be able to do it without quote unquote experiences for anyone listening. Or when people tell you can't do something, I realize it's people who are haters and they're jealous and they want themselves to be bigger than you. Mm. So they don't know how else to react. They're not like you and me, who are rational, open-minded, smart, kind people. And it's also how, if you have spirituality, if you want to, you have a moral compass, this all comes in. So my point is, my event with you, your event with me is going to be great, because you're giving me a chance.
Benefit each other.
To shine. Exactly. Like I just did Housewives of New York. One episode, Chanel in the City was featured. We did an event with Luann. You guys could check that out now with Real Housewives of New York on Bravo TV. But I wasn't myself fully, which I wish I was. Because if I was, I would be able to show my comedic side very well. See, what people don't realize is, with comedians, you got to have a good draw. You got to do it at a good club where the owners are on your side and they push you, where they push the marketing and they get people for not only you, but other comedians on the lineup. they give you that chance. That's why a lot of podcasters do their own event so that they get their following and they can fill a room. Everything has to come down to money. So when someone tells you you can't do something, I don't buy into that. And I'm very passionate, you know, about bullying and cyberbullying and anti-bullying. And I just feel like you don't need to put someone down because you don't feel that they can do something.
And like you said, it all comes down to jealousy. I feel like if you're really, you know, confident in yourself, you'd be happy to help others. And if there's a lack of that, then you can really see right through that person. But you mentioned earlier a really good point. There's a really fine line between nice and too nice. Can you kind of go off of that and just explain what you mean by that?
Sure. I feel like I've struggled, and a lot of people come to me and they say they struggle with, especially in the industry or just in life, like any job really, you know, how do I get my point across with by being nice, but not too nice and get taken advantage of? Mm-hmm. I've struggled through that a lot. Cause if I'm nice, I've realized when I'm too nice and I keep everything inside and I just am a yes woman, I internalize and then I get upset and resent that person that I didn't share the spotlight, you know? So I think the most important thing is to find that happy balance. It's okay to be nice, but it's not okay to be too nice, because when you're too nice to the wrong people, you're going to be taken advantage of, and then you can't blame anyone but yourself. I say when you're too nice, do that for the nurses. Do that for the frontline workers. Do that for the people that are sick. Do that for the kids that are hungry. Do that for the homeless. That's when you should be too nice. That's what I realized. I'm like, oh, okay, I could be too nice and give my heart to the soup kitchens of the world, to kids who want to play baseball but don't have the money to go and play baseball, and create awareness with you for an event for that. You know, host a comedy club or podcast event with you so people can just laugh, like you said, and not take it seriously. I think don't be too nice to the people in the industry that you know are being shady to you or disrespectful to you, or, you know, because you'll know that right away. That's when you don't have to be so nice. You can be polite, you can be kind, but, you know, protect yourself.
I see a lot of influencers or stand-up comics kind of doing like happy hours or events that are live virtually for charity. Have you considered doing that to like have a platform to get your comedy out but making a difference?
Totally. I actually wanted to partner up with some of the comedy clubs virtually, but now coming up, I will be partnering up with partnering up with my co-host and my business partner, Dina Lohan.
We're going to get into that for sure.
We're going to get into that. We started a podcast called Listen to Me, the OG Mama D. It's on Spotify and iTunes. And so we're going to collaborate for a comedy virtual event with Cedric the Entertainer, hopefully, and other comedians like Tom Green, hopefully, that we've have relationships with that are real established comedians too and entertainers. And we're going to start working on a virtual events with them to get my comedy out there, to get our podcast out there, but most importantly, to use the platform to give back towards COVID-19 charities, towards the hospitals, towards whatever the needs are. Because like I told you, we are blessed. We're alive. We're not in bad situations. We need to use that platform and think out of the box, make people laugh, but let them pay for the laughter by donating. Let them know that they're giving back. They're not just paying for Chanel Amari to be, you know, a famous comedian too, you know. Which is all good in the hood of COVID didn't happen. Hey, listen, all comedians got to pay their bills. But yeah.
No, that's awesome. And I would definitely be there with, you know, maybe the Chanel cocktail. I'm trying to think of a cool name. You know, there's been all these like quarantine drinks.
I was trying to do it really quickly. Like I was trying to do that in the beginning. That was my idea. But then some people were like, I don't think we should do it. And then they did it. And I've been so busy with the podcasting, but you're right. We should do an event.
We should do a cocktail hour. How do you feel about that? We can promote it, hopefully get people to come on. And I hate to say it, but I feel like sometimes when for me, I'm just starting. For you, you have a bit of a bigger following and stuff like that. I feel like it just takes like one or two good people to, you know, help promote. I hate to say it, but we all need a little help. And I think trying to beg people, I think it's helpful.
Yeah. And it's like it about, sucks. Like you said, like teaming up with the right people that want to support and like will believe in your cause and do it with you, you know? So definitely tune in for our events that we're going to be doing together virtually, in person, and also yeah, any events that I'm going to do with comedy, you can definitely listen, follow me for those updates at Chanel Omari, at Chanel Inda, because you'll get those updates soon, hopefully.
So yes, I want to now go into your new podcast. You have been all over Newsday, my girl. Page 6. How cool. Yeah. I love that. I think there was even one on you today. There was a picture of you.
So Page 6 has been very supportive. So has Newsday. Page 6 did the video of us wishing Dina Happy Mother's Day and then plugging a podcast. Right. But they also, we were on their podcast, and then Daily Mail, TV, they've been good to us. Us Weekly, like everybody, the press has been really good about the podcast. The way we came about the podcast was Dean. So I've been, this is one thing people don't know about me that I think they should or they do now. I worked in the business since I was a kid. So when I was 17, I actually, when I had summers off, I was Lindsay Lohan's assistant. So Dina hired me because I grew up with Lindsay and our friends. We grew up with each other. We had same mutual friends. So we were very close as kids. Then I became her assistant, traveled the world, worked really hard for her, learned my shit in the entertainment industry, then became Dina's executive assistant. And from there, she promoted me within like producing shows with her. And that's how I got my feet wet in TV. Then from there, I went on and produced my other stuff and built a career. And then when she came on my podcast, Chanel in the City, last year, she had such a good time. And she's like, you know what? We both are close, genuinely. We have a really raw, good friendship. We get along. She said, I could use your expertise on the podcast. You're a comedian yourself. And I want to talk about all my experiences because I've been through 3 decades of everything in the public eye. And we both agreed that because we both have gone through public eye things in different ways, where people assume the worst of us, and we have a segment called Setting the Record Straight. So it's about setting the record straight on any celebrity that comes on our show, talking about celebrity gossip, tabloids, and how to set that record straight. You know, like me, I wasn't really a typical princess. I've worked my whole life. Right. Or people didn't know that she also created one of the biggest superstars in the world. She created Lindsay Lohan's career that a lot of people didn't understand. She had to be a certain type of mother behind closed doors and in front of the public eye where people didn't understand. So you're going to get a lot of her story in setting the record straight, but you're also going to get a lot of us setting the record straight about other current events and celebrities coming on to talk about their obstacles and like how they felt also, you know, I guess objectified in the public eye.
This is so exciting. I honestly cannot wait. When does the first podcast launch?
Yeah, it airs May 13th.
Spotify. May 13th, like in 5 days?
Yeah, so I'm under a lot of, yeah. That's why it's been like crazy, but I was like, I was so happy when you asked me to be on your podcast. I was like, this is my number one. I've wanted to be on your podcast for so long. And we're going to have you on our podcast.
Absolutely. We're going to do a live one at New Best, right?
We're going to do a live one, yeah. Me and you were going to do a live one at New Best.
Right before quarantine.
Quarantine. But we're going to do another one on Zoom, mm-hmm. and then we're going to do one on the live event in the city, which I would love, that would be our next physical event to plan for and for people to come.
Absolutely. We got to do all of these. We need to get out there. And
yes.
You are such, what I think is so beautiful about you is that you're really raw with your emotions and people can feel close and connected to you. I know I'm the only one that can see you right now, but you have a very personable personality. You invite me to speak to you and spill to you. And I know this podcast is not really showing that, but in general, in our conversations, you always have an open heart and soul. Like, it's so crazy. We've only met once in person. Like, I feel like you're like my sister. You are my sister.
You keep reminding me, like, I'm like, really? Because I feel so close to you.
Yes, and this one time we met was for a charity event we did for NAMI. All proceeds at Alice and Olivia went to that foundation, and that's where I met Chanel. Chanel Omari from Chanel in the City. That's how she introduces herself. Oh my gosh, hey, I'm Chanel from Chanel in the City. I love
and
this.
Was so kind, was so not judgmental. Like, you included me in the event, you know.
And I'm honored.
You were just so beautiful and like you just wanted to really give back. That's why I love associating with you, because like you think about the bigger picture. And I think it's important we all want to eat and we all want to entertain and we all want attention. But at the end of the day, we all have to realize that there's so much food going around for everyone. There's a way to be kind. There's a way to share. There's a way to like do it. I know I sound like a nerd and I'm so freaking cheesy, but it's for the greater cause.
Absolutely. And right? I think this time of our lives, if it doesn't scream give back, if it doesn't scream bigger picture perspective, then when will? Like, this is the time to think about others, to help each other. People keep saying we're in this together.
Together.
Because there's no other way. There is no other way.
Look, I or you could have taken, and I'm not trying to be a martyr or like this high almighty righteous. I'm the biggest flawed person you'll ever meet. I'm the first one to admit it. That's why I put shit on my Instagram, because I'm like, I have nothing to hide. But listen, the truth is, I could have been probably more famous right now to the point of insanity, because I would have no soul and I would just make it always about me. We know those people in the industry that they're always about them. They convince you subliminally that they're trying to help, but they're never talking about charity. It's always about them. And at one point you're like, why the fuck am I buying into someone when it's all about them and money? How did they convince me? And then the audience gets smarter and they're like, why am I buying? That's why Justin Bieber changed a lot of his shit. A lot of people realized the audience was smarter and saying, why am I supporting people who aren't, yeah, their music's great. Yeah, their comedy's great. Yeah, they're great. But where's the charity? Where's the giving back? Where's the selfless part of it? And so I think it's important. I could have been that. But the reason it took me so long and I'm still not there is because it's the moral compass that keeps making me go back and forth. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like I'm fighting with the devil and the angel every second of the day. So I just want everyone to know, I'm sure you're going through that. It's normal.
It's normal. It's just a different path you're probably taking that might take a little bit longer, but morally it's better. And I mean, in my opinion, it's better. And it's ultimately more rewarding doing it like the kind way.
You're right.
So something I find really fascinating and I want to hear from you, dating in quarantine. Tell me, I know you're a single lady, guys, if you're listening, Chanel is gorgeous and she has the biggest heart of gold. First of all, what do you look for in a guy? And do you feel like you've been using the apps before, during quarantine? Tell me.
Love these questions. They're great. Yeah. So I was using the apps like definitely religiously before Corona and quarantine, but I was actually not having a lot of luck on it. And I was actually introduced, you're getting the 411 on this exclusivity, but I was introduced by my parents, the old school way, which I never buy into, this modern girl. Right. And I finally took my mom's advice. She's like, listen, let me introduce, my best friend has a guy for you. Just see what can happen. He's also in your industry. So the light bulb went in. That's why I tell the ladies and the guys out there, go on first dates. You never know. It might be your next job. It might be your next friend. It doesn't have to always be romantic. It might be your next therapist. Okay.
That's I love it. So, it's so true. You always learn something new, even from always. Every bad.
Even if you like the person, it goes sour, which I'm about to tell you my story, because I had the privilege of both. You'll always, like you said, you'll always learn. You'll evolve. You'll get stronger. You'll get better. I rather get stronger after every breakup and better, like Cardi B, like how she raps, than be the same young girl stuck and never learning and growing. Because then I'm never going to be a better person if I'm stuck. I'm always going to be that same shit person. When you grow and you evolve, you become a better person. So the long story short of that is dating. So I met this guy and I really liked him. And he was in my industry. He was in our industry. And I mixed pleasure with business, thinking it was fine, thinking we could separate it. But I think once Corona, we were dating like 5 times in person. We went on 5 dates before.
So that's a solid amount. By 5 dates, I feel like you really like this person.
Yeah. And then the quarantine happened and the COVID happened. And when, you know, you see a lot of people's true colors, this is me now, including my own. When crisis hits and no one knows how to react, it really shows what kind of person you are after it. So I try to always come from love. So the problem with quarantine dating, it's tough. I don't want to be a hypocrite. I think that it's a great way to date. I think virtual dating is like the healthy way to date, whether before Corona or after. I think it's a way to get to know a person intimately and mentally, instead of just making it all about physicality. When you do that, I think you get into a dangerous zone. And then you ask the questions, why did he or she ghost me? Why don't I hear from that person? Because now it's too personal. But when you get to know each other virtually, which I got to know this guy virtually for a while, and then I'm like, if I like him this way, I'm obviously going to like him when we're in person. The problem with dating, and a lot of my friends told me during Corona, is, again, you see someone's true colors. So whether you're dating them virtually or you physically with them, you might not agree with how they're reacting to this crisis. You might not agree with how, if they're, some people are fighting over leaving the house. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
So for me right now, I'm open to it. If a guy said to me, hey, you want to go on a virtual date tomorrow night? Of course I would say yes. What do I have to lose? I'm not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Would I be so invested? Probably not. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean, and I think it's a beautiful thing because, like you said, when you meet someone in person, if you really like them on that first date, you get this emotional attachment, which is so sad to say on a first date. Girls, I don't know. Okay, I shouldn't say all girls, but for me, when I like someone, like, I kind of attach quickly, and I'm so hurt, like, if I get ghosted, whereas I feel... If it was something virtually, first of all, you can go through more people quicker without leaving your house. Like, you can wear a nice top and your pajama pants.
Them out so fast, like a video
game. Yeah, like, whoop, whoop.
Jules, great idea. We should start a fucking dating video game. Excuse my language.
Yes.
But you're right, because, like, that's what I mean. I meant to say, when you're invested, you can still invest virtually. But my point is, if you feel like you're not getting anywhere with that person, or that person, there's red flags, then end it virtually.
You can end it and be, oh, sorry.
Literally, like, end it.
End it and block the person.
Yeah. Right. Or then, like me, like, you regret it, which I recently regretted it. Like, shutting. So remember, before you end it with someone, guys or girls listening, really know that you want to do it. And I'll tell you why. We always break up with people for the next new shiny thing. And then we get that next new shiny thing and take it from Coco Chanel. Because I've been through life, bitches. I've been through billionaires. I've been through broke jokes. I've been through middle class jokes. I've been through rich folks. Okay?
Like, that was brilliant.
Let me tell you, I'm not judging. I'm just trying to be funny. But let me tell you, I've been through celebrities, everything. That new shiny toy is going to shine for you for very little. When you get out of that, and we all, as human beings, we all have a breaking, I like to call it a breaking point, mentally, all of us, whether we're normal or we're not, we all have a breaking point, and we reflect silently. We never tell anybody this. You know, when you're sitting and you're drinking coffee outside, and you realize, shit, you know, did I treat that person right? I feel like I yelled at that person. You know, maybe I threw that guy away too fast.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I threw that girl away too fast, even though she was needy. Mm-hmm. So you start thinking, because I'm telling you, I did this recently. I threw him away too fast, in a way.
For something shiny?
Not for something shiny. I felt, in my case, I did it for fighting for myself more, because it's a little bit complicated. Our story is that I didn't feel he was defending me in my career.
Oh.
And supporting me, and they were supporting other people that didn't deserve it. So for me, that's a trust issue. I need my man to support. And I've had listeners ask me, my guy doesn't support me, but he'll support my nemesis. Do I still try to give it a chance? And I say, you can give it a chance by communicating with him. But if he doesn't change that, chances are never going to change that. And to me, that's never going to be a healthy relationship, because you're always going to resent that girl, or resent that person in your boyfriend or man's life or girl's life, and you're never going to communicate or come to a resolution. So either you accept it wholeheartedly to be with that person, or in my opinion, I say you leave that person. You find someone else.
That's so interesting you say that, because when I was playing on the Virginia tennis team, I was dating a guy, and I had this one arch nemesis on my own tennis team. But if he ever, like, wanted to say that, even just, like, a compliment, I would have slit his throat. You know what I mean?
Like, you asked him to play, like, because I'm not as versed, so educate me with the terms of tennis.
Sure.
Imagine he asked her to serve, and you've been dying to serve and be front player, and he never gave you that chance, even though he knew you had the potential, but gave it to her without earning it, and especially knowing that you confided in him about her. That, to me, I don't know how a guy likes you, and I shouldn't talk shit. I'm just saying, I'm trying to comprehend, like, if a guy really likes you, why would he do that?
Yeah, whatever field it's in, like, you should be the number one priority, right, in my opinion. For me, that's a total deal breaker. I wouldn't I might communicate that, and...
No, I want to know your opinion. Would you communicate that, or in your head, would you know, this is just a deal breaker, I'm going to walk away?
Well, first of all, it depends how long you're with that person. Obviously, five dates.
Why?
Five dates.
You were Yeah, but 5 dates in person, but then we were talking every day in quarantine for 2 months.
So then I feel like that's a long amount of time. So I wouldn't just shut that person out. I would express my feelings and try to not change the person, because I really don't think you can change, but reason with them, see why they think this way, tell them how you feel. And if they don't get their act together, bye-bye. Like, are you kidding? Bye, Felicia. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's why I felt very, in general, I'm like, if I date someone, they have to really be on my side.
They have to be with you through thick and thin. Like, I hate to say it. Like, I know it's not a marriage yet, but it's true. Like, you're going to
apologize. He apologized when there was, like, few days apart when I, like, was very firm. I expressed myself. Another tip for people listening, never express from anger. I did a mistake. Mm-hmm. Like, always write things down and then talk about it later when you're more calm and, like, have your focus points. Because even though I got across why I felt so hurt by him, it didn't come across well. Because A, it was through text and it sounded like a mean, angry tone. And that's not what I was trying to say. I was trying to actually be honest about how I feel and why he might feel like this might. Like, I wanted him to understand, this isn't not going to work out because of your insecurities you've had with other women in the past or my insecurities. This isn't going to work out for the plain, simple fact that I'm communicating with you, that if you do not have my back in any circumstance, especially with my nemesis and especially with not putting me when you have the power to kind of help me with my career, how can I have anyone romantically, a friend or a colleague in my life? Think about it. I mean, that's like a really serious trust issue. I'll always be second guessing him and myself. So I thought the right thing was to let him go for him and my own sanity. I might sound too vulnerable and crazy right now, but, and the funny thing is I regretted it. I took some time. I took like 3 weeks. We stopped talking. And guess who reached out to who? I reached out to him. After all this.
Really?
I haven't heard from him. What does Jules think about that?
Wow, that is beyond me. I mean, you got to think about all the different possibilities. You also think about coronavirus. Is he not dealing with coronavirus the right way? Obviously, I don't know all the little details of your relationship.
Well, from what you heard, like, what would you say? And you don't have to, like, agree with me because you're my friend.
Yeah. Well, the thing I can think of is I feel like a lot of guys, I don't know what he's like. A lot of guys have egos, and maybe he feels like you busted his, and he did, or maybe he felt so rejected and hurt that he's scared to put himself in a position to talk to you again. Those are definitely possibilities. Man,
really, I feel this, like, a guy's situation is just like, you see what you get. It's like, if they don't answer, talk to you, or fight for you, they don't like you.
Right. And the other option, other possibilities, is maybe he met someone. Maybe he's also using the apps. How long ago did you write to him?
2 days ago.
2 days ago. Yeah, that's a solid amount of time. I feel like you should have heard back by now. What did you say? Like, did you, like, say hey?
I wrote because he did want to try to be friends and apologize. What my problem was he wasn't understanding why I was mad first, even with me expressing it. And two, he wasn't changing, like you said.
Right.
We expect people to not change himself. I was expecting him to change the decision after knowing how I expressed myself. And also, after him saying how much he liked me, I thought, wow, maybe he really... Here's another thing that us girls have to realize, and guys, stop being gullible. I'm so gullible sometimes because I want him to like me.
Yeah.
But if I was so secure with myself, which I'm trying to get to, I wouldn't have to rely on him liking me to feel worth it. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I thought he liked me so much. I created this crazy narrative.
You
in my
create
head
an image. True. But I think you're...
He didn't fight for me. So I was like, How do you really like me if you're taking everyone else's side but mine? I don't know. That's just weird to me.
Well, first of all, I'm confused why you're reaching out. I feel like he's not good, and it's hard to see when you have those feelings, but I feel like maybe you're a little bored right now. I don't think he's the right one. I think you should realize that we're, like, in quarantine, so it's easy to be like, what if, like, I gave him another chance? What if I did this? I feel like I really want you to stay strong and try to explore other options. I mean, your story is pretty disgusting. I wouldn't want anything to do with that guy, especially after you told him how you felt. Like, maybe you can be his friend, maybe, but even a friend would want to help. A good friend would want to help. This just doesn't sound like a person that you should have in your life. In my, like, I know that's really hard to hear.
Like, if a guy did that to you, would you have him in your life?
Hell no.
Really?
Hell no. Of course not. I mean, life is so difficult. If your boyfriend or man is not gonna stick by you through, you know, your career choices or opportunities, then bye. Like, what? You know what I mean?
And I do agree with the girls who are like, well, what if I was wrong, right? Like, what if I...
Yeah, you start questioning yourself because you have time. No, absolutely not.
I admit it. I come off sometimes really strong when I'm passionate and I'm expressing myself. It's only because I feel like if I'm telling you this a million times and then I'm telling you this a million and one times again, I don't like... You know what it is? I don't like... Me and you have talked about this a lot, like, off the record, like, I don't like when people pretend to be innocent just because they're not, they don't like confrontation mm-hmm. or they smile. Like, you're not so innocent just because you're like, well, I had no idea. I didn't know. It's like, then do something about it if you have the power, right? Or be a big boy and go out of your way to show that girl that you really like her direction. Like you said, life's too short and too complicated. I don't think I have it in me. And that's my advice also for other people. Like, I just don't think you should stick in a situation that feels complicated.
It seems it's so easy to settle for something, you know, that you, someone you've been talking to, have a little connection with, but you have to really find it within yourself to explore new options and not go for something that's maybe comfortable or something you had. I really would, you know, suggest moving forward because...
Moving on, yeah.
I mean, this guy just does not sound like the right guy. It takes so many guys to find the right one, but I feel like when you do, you'll know it's right. No. It's easy. It's supposed to feel easy. That's what I heard. Easy. Not one time have I felt like something has been easy. So that's like, until then, like, you won't know.
I won't know. You're right. And he is a good guy, and I don't want to talk shit, and I send him love and well wishes, but you are right. The right advice for us women to give others is you just move on when something sounds sticky or complicated. It's easier to do.
100%. Wow. My hair is a little funky right now.
Oh, you look so beautiful. But it's like our relationship, like even friendships, even colleagues. I feel like you're so amazing, and you've been so amazing to me. There's never been an issue. So you're right. I know the difference between someone who really like cares and loves me as a friend. And I know the difference when somebody likes me more. And I know the difference when somebody wants the best for me. And then I know the difference when someone's secretly competing with me. So you're right.
It's these little things, little fine lines, but you feel the difference, you know the difference, and when you actually experience the right thing, you know, and you can look back and say, wow, that person was a jerk. That girl was stabbing me behind my back. That guy actually wasn't making time for me. A lot of guys say, oh, I'm busy. What's on my eyebrow?
Oh, wait.
There's a mega fur ball that just landed on my eyebrow. A lot of guys say, oh, I'm busy. It just means... He doesn't want anything to do with you. I learned when a guy wants you, he will effing chase you.
Yes, you're right. That's what I'm saying. It's like, girls, come on. We all tell each other these stories. No, when the guy likes you, we'll know.
We will know.
I'm a hypocrite because I'm telling you, he's not into me, this guy. You're right. And you're being a good friend by telling me, yo, I love you.
I would have loved to tell you that he was right. You know I would have. I know we all want to love someone. But I'm not going to let you love someone wrong.
Thank you. And also, it makes me feel better about my decision, where now I don't feel as guilty that if I never hear back from him again. I did my part by trying to apologize, but you know what it is? A lot of us feel guilty. Oh my God, but he's not answering. What if he's really crying in his room? He's not crying in his room.
Oh, my favorite thing to do was, oh, he didn't respond to my text. Mom, what if he, like, died?
On red.
Yeah, maybe he died. Like, is he okay?
He left me on red. Maybe he's just having a panic attack or he fainted. It's like, bitch, stop making excuses, okay?
I know. That is the funniest thing I've ever heard. Oh. Well, Chanel, thank you so much for coming on Jules on the Hustle, giving us some insight into your life, the reality television world, and some of the things you are dealing with now in quarantine.
Thank you so much, Jules, for having me. I love your podcast. I listen to it all the time. This is such an honor that you've had me, and thank you for letting me open up and having your listeners think differently about me. And make sure you follow me for more of my info, comedy stuff, and podcast stuff at Chanel Amari on all social media platforms, and at Chanel in the for at Chanel in the City. You are so amazing, Jules. I wish there were more people like you out there. You've encouraged me to be a better person. You've been such a good, true friend to me, and so I love you, and I thank you for supporting me.
Thank you so much, Chanel. Those are such kind words, and obviously I feel the same way about you. I can't wait to have more Cipollini dinners and to gossip a little bit more together.
Yes, and to our event coming up.
Yes.
Hopefully during quarantine virtually, or you guys should stay tuned on both our Instagrams about an in-person podcast, because Jules and I will be doing that. That will happen.
Absolutely. We will put all the details together and get back to the Jules on the Hustle listeners and the Chanel in the City listeners. I look forward to being on your podcast and then linking up with New Best and doing that live podcast.
Yes, I love you, and thank you guys all, and wishing you all health and stay safe during COVID-19.
I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast with the lovely Chanel Amari. It's amazing how you can really compare reality television to sports. But then again, I can compare anything to sports. It's my secret talent. But in reality television or any television, you see the highlights. You see the fame, the fortune, the luxurious life. You don't see the day in, the day out, behind the scenes drama and chaos that Chanel has to deal with. Same as in tennis. You see the highlights. I always talk about this. You see when a player wins the US Open, goes down on his or her knees and puts her hands on her face and cries and thanks the crowd. You see the good stuff. But really, Chanel is a strong woman. She deals with a lot, and she is just someone we always have to, you know, follow and just learn from. Be sure to follow her on her podcast, Chanel in the City. You can find that on Spotify, Apple, and her Instagram is at Chanel Amari, and her podcast Instagram is at Chanel in the. And as always, follow me for updates on my new episodes at Jules El Baba at JulesElBaba. If you guys enjoy this podcast, be sure to rate and subscribe, leave a review. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say. And as always, love you guys. And if you have an idea or you have someone in particular you'd like to be on my podcast, please leave that. I would love to hear what you guys think. But anyways, see you guys next time on Jules on the Hustle.